Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And welcome back. This is Matt Watson, your host today for Startup Hustle. Today, I am very excited to talk to Mr. David Selinger, and he is with a company called Deep Sentinel and is reinventing how the security systems work, and excited to get all to talk all about that. Before we get started, I want to take a second to tell you today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems, which we all have too many of. Whether it's talent management, payroll, onboarding tools, Gusto's HR platform has it all for you. Be smarter than your competitors. Try a 3-month free subscription now. Just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. Well, welcome to the show.
Matt, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I guess going on the Gusto theme for a second, how is hiring for you? Is that a disaster?
Oh, man. So, you know, it's been weird is probably the right answer, right? I mean, like there's kind of stages of growth of companies that are normal and stages that are hard and ones that are easier. The pandemic's just been weird. And it's a interesting combination of people that are really scared and like want to work hard and are willing to kind of really put their elbows in, put their shoulders into the work. And then a bunch of people that are just ghosting interviews. We've had, you know, the typical story of somebody will sign up for an interview, show up and say, I'm just verifying that I'm here, and then hang up. And, I mean, you can kind of figure out what that's for.
Wow.
And, it's been ridiculous. And I mean, you hear that everywhere, but to actually have it happen time and time again, you know, in our hiring report, the ghosting not showing up ratio is wicked, wicked high right now. And I can talk about it a little bit. I mean, we're an interesting business in that we have a bunch of different types of employees. So we've got technology.
Where are you guys based out of?
So we're based in California. So but most of our employees now through the pandemic, we've really gone nationwide and globally wide.
Like most people.
And we have everything from software engineers to DevOps, which are technical positions, AI engineers, typical kind of back office finance. And then we also have a number of hourly positions like our security guards. And it's been different across the board. I would say at a very high level, the number one thing that we're seeing is like I said, it's weird. But the number one thing that I think is actually maybe good is I think the pandemic forced a lot of people to rethink what they want to do, whether you're in a job that you like and you enjoy, whether you like the people that you're working with.
Well, especially if there's more opportunities, right?
Yeah.
There's more opportunities out there. So like, you know, I don't really like working here and everybody's hiring, so I might as well go do something
else. Exactly. Exactly. So I think, you know, though I would say I think that's good, right? Like a lot of people are afraid of employee churn. I would way rather have someone quit and find somebody who's like super stoked on their job than yeah. be surviving and kind of like hanging on with somebody that doesn't really like it. So, I mean, it's been interesting. We went through a rash. We have almost no employee churn at all in general. We went through a rash right at the beginning of the pandemic as people kind of rethought their priorities. And then we went back to normal again, where we've had very, very little employee churn the last year.
So tell us, you said you're primarily based in California. How old is your company?
Yeah, so I'll tell you a little about Deep Sentinel. We're, like you said, we're a security company. We started about 4 years ago. And our basic mantra is to stop crimes, actually stop crimes. And the backdrop of that, my background's in artificial intelligence. I got to go to Stanford. I did a bit before then. And then my last three gigs have been in AI. And so Deep Sentinel's a little bit of a leap to the left of the rest of my career. I was at Amazon really early and ran an AI team there, the R&D division of the personalization team. I started Redfin, which is an AI and data company in the real estate space. And then my last company was Relevance, which is another AI company. So just AI, AI, AI. With Deep Sentinel, our entire company is started differently. I wanted it to be taking advantage of AI in the most interesting possible way. But what we found was that there's this humongous gap in the security space where all the solutions you might buy, whether they're cameras or alarms, they don't actually stop crimes. And that was the big, to me, like the big aha moment. My neighbor had a home invasion. She has an alarm. She has cameras. And yet this worst possible thing happened and none of them took any steps to prevent it. And that's really the problem that we wanted to solve. We found that was that AI is really, really good about taking cameras and transforming them from a recording device where you post on Nextdoor, here's this dude breaking into my car and stealing my stuff, into a device that actually stops crime.
Well, and so I have my house when I bought it had home security cameras and they were the old coax cable kind.
Sure.
The problem was the video quality on them was so awful that they were sort of useless anyways. And so I bought some wireless cameras, like probably a lot of people. And then the wireless cameras suck because the batteries die like every 3 months or 6 months. However, sure. They were super cool that they use some sort of machine learning AI magic to tell me, you know, that there's a package at my front door or, you know, can tell the difference between a car driving by or a deer, you know, or whatever, right? Like different stuff that they can do, which is super cool. And it sounds like what you're doing is trying to take that to the next level to go beyond recognizing deer to go to recognizing crime, right? I mean, is that kind of the genesis?
It's even more than that. Right. What I observed about 4 years ago when I started the company was I built a state-of-the-art AI system on my cameras. They're kind of similar to what you initially described. They're wired cameras. They're PoE. They were state-of-the-art though, right? I mean, it was thousands and thousands of dollars to have them put on my house.
Now we got 4K.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing that I learned was that whether it's 4K, 1080p, 720p, or like 320p coaxial crappy one, they all do the same thing, which is just record stuff. And if you turn on the alerts, even if you put AI behind alerts, like you can't respond.
You get bugs flying around.
Yeah.
You get alerts about bugs.
Even if you just filter it out to the things that might be suspicious, you're still getting dozens of alerts a day. And if you have a life, which I hope all of your listeners do, if you have a job that demands 100% of your attention, which I would guess 100% of your podcasts are about, is like how to do better at pouring my energy into crushing it with my business, you don't have time to be sitting there looking at your phone. I gotta give you 100% of my attention while I'm on this podcast. I fly on a plane. I can't be giving attention to my phone. And those are all those missed opportunities where that's how crime happens, right? Go on Nextdoor and you look on Nextdoor and you're going to see dozens and dozens of videos of while I was asleep, this person broke into my car. While I was asleep, this person did this. While I was away, somebody did this. And they think the verbiage on there is my favorite, right? It's just so ironic. I caught this guy stealing my... No, you didn't. You got a recording of a guy stealing your stuff. Congratulations, right? Like, do you want a cookie? I'll give you a cookie.
Yeah.
I mean,
you didn't prevent it. You just have evidence of it at this point.
And so what we do is we take the AI, we filter all that out, and then we use it to send that video within 5 seconds to a live guard, fully annotated with what's going on. So by way of example, you come up to my house. The second you step onto my property, our cameras trigger and start sending the video to an artificial intelligence. That AI is looking for you to do anything suspicious.
Now hold on.
Yeah.
How do you filter out the Amazon guy who comes by every day and the Instacart guy?
Well, so here's what we do is if they're bringing a package on, the AI triggers and will still elevate it to a person. We don't alert immediately. We still believe that you've got to have an effective, well-trained, contextual human being in the middle. And that person's job is, if it's the Amazon guy, I'm going to watch him, make sure that he leaves the property. If it's the neighbor coming by to bring cookies, I'm going to watch, make sure they knock on the door and somebody answers the door. And then they respond appropriately. If that neighbor that brings cookies all of a sudden pulls out a crowbar and starts banging on the door, within 3 seconds, they're going to hear, "This is Deep Sentinel Security. I need you to stop what you're doing. The police are on their way." If they just sit there at your doorstop, then after a minute of kind of loitering, they'll say, "Hey, this is Deep Sentinel Security. I just want to make sure that, you know, you're supposed to be here." And in all of those scenarios, what you have is you have an intervention before damage is done to the property.
Yeah.
And what that means is 99% of the time, if that is a criminal, they pulled out their crowbar, bam, they're gone. Because you know what's the neatest thing about this too, is when our guards tell someone the police are on their way, that's not a bluff. When we say that, we call the police instantly. And instead of like let's say you have ADT and you get an alarm. Okay, hey, I've got a motion in the living room, or I've got a garage door. The guy probably just left his garage door open. Can you send a cop? What cop wants to respond to that? None of them, because they're 99% false alarms.
Yeah.
When we call police, we get an instant response. I've got a white male in a hoodie with a crowbar banging on the front door. I need an instant response.
So
every cop across the nation responds to that.
So when you went to start this business, it's very clear the benefits that it can provide, right? But what were the daunting things? You're like, man, how I have to like also invent like my own video cameras, or like what were those barriers? You're thinking, man, I can apply machine learning and that part of it makes sense, and I can provide, you know, remote surveillance and whatever. But wasn't the like developing, having to deal with the hardware side of this like a daunting thing that you didn't
everything
want to
about
deal
this
with?
Business was daunting. Like, I mean, again, yeah. This isn't my first business I started. It's just by far the hardest, right? I hope to think of this one as my swan song, right? Like the culmination of all of my past successes and more importantly, the culmination of all my past failures, like bringing all that knowledge to bear. I would say there's two things that were really hard about this business. One was what you said, hardware. I'd never built hardware. I did research on robotics in college and built robots. And so that was kind of my experience with hardware. I'd never done mass production, you know, design my own print circuit board and assemble it and then manage that through quality and delivery. So that was definitely a new experience for me. The second thing though, which I think is just as rewarding. And by the way, I mean, like we built our own cameras and they're sick, right? Like they've got huge batteries. They have solar power, so you never have to change the batteries. We have a built-in charger and all this stuff, right? So that was a great and rewarding experience. The part that actually has been the hardest was gluing it all together. Once we had the cameras and we had the AI and we had guards sitting at a console, it's figuring out how do you make sure guards do exactly what you just said? They respond right to the Amazon guy. Okay, now Amazon's using these white vans and people without uniforms to deliver, which happened during the pandemic. How do you deal with that? How do you use AI to make sure that not only are they doing, to not only say that we know what we're supposed to do, but we use AI and data to tell that our guards are doing the right things and oversee that and ensure that we're delivering a great experience to our customers. And that really has been the hardest thing, building this from an operational perspective to scale. So I've got about 55-60 employees right now, and 40 of them are guards. And so making sure that they have
well,
the
you
right
must have employees all around the world, right, to do this 24/7?
Yep, we do. We've got a corpus of them here in California. We've got a bunch of them all over the US, and then we've got two stations in outside of the US to make sure we're covering 24/7.
Where are your employees outside the U.S.?
Most of them are in the Philippines.
Okay.
But we also
we can
have
relate. We can relate at full scale. We've got over 200 employees in the Philippines. So.
Yeah. I mean, I found the culture there to be fantastic. They're really good at this job. They're very attentive. It's a great, you know, you talked about hiring right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Labor pool there is wonderful. You know, sure. We're able to provide a high quality of life to these people. And they're able to work really hard for us in the night shift, which is pretty tough.
Yeah, absolutely. We can definitely relate it at full scale on that side of it. So to me, I guess I'm still wondering in my head, why did you have to create your own video camera? Wasn't there something like off the shelf you could use for that? Because that seems like
a
daunting, crazy task.
That is such a good question. And, you know, looking at the business, where right now over 80% of our sales are for third-party cameras. So we have a whole camera integration layer where we support third-party hardware that's not manufactured by us. But we found two really key things. Number one, if you're just building services on top of third-party hardware, while you may have a really interesting service, you have a really hard time telling people what it is you do, meaning that just human beings are so visual and so narrative-based in terms of their storytelling. I can't show your listeners what the cameras are that we built, but let me say this. Our cameras were designed to be our brand. Whether you buy our cameras or you use your own cameras, when you think of Deep Sentinel as a customer, you think of our cameras. Our cameras are they're uniquely designed. They're more aggressive looking than like if you bought ones from Nest or Ring.
Yeah,
or whatever,
I'm looking at it online here. I see flashing red lights and
right.
A dude running away with a crowbar.
That's right. It's got two functions. It has a camera, and actually the speaker is separate. It's the largest speaker of any camera that you can buy out there. It's got red LED lights that spin around that tell you somebody's watching. It's got a huge battery in it because it's designed to always be on. It has built-in solar panels if you want them. And that, all those things that I just said are indicators of trust. We take your security seriously. If you hang up a cute looking white camera that's designed to disappear into the background, how much do you really trust it? And it turns out like that matters, right? And so I love having our own cameras because it allows us to tell our story in a way that's fundamentally different than anybody else. And as you and all of your startup listeners know, your story is almost as important as the way you tell it.
Well, right? For sure these cameras look different and scary as I'm looking at your website here. They look pretty cool. But I still wonder, like, there wasn't a middle ground where you could have taken like a off-the-shelf, like some of the hardware and then wrapped it in your own like stuff. Like, were you able to reuse some of that? Like, or do you have to start from scratch on like how to build a video camera 101?
No, we did a little bit of that, right? So the chips on the inside of this are the same ones as the ones that you see in like an Arlo camera. And
okay.
The electronics design is pretty similar to that.
A lot of shared
battery
components.
Designs. Yeah, so we didn't go all the way down, but we did go down to the kind of the best of breed components that you would look at in other cameras. And but still, even doing that is pretty ridiculously difficult, right? You still have to manage supply chain and everything like that.
And that's got me. I want to ask the next question: is like, how many iterations of this hardware design did you have to go through? Where like, you know, you order 1,000 of them, and then you get them in, and you're like, oh shit, this didn't work at all, and you like throw them all away. Like, did you have to go through that a few times?
I would describe this in three phases. The first phase is the one you just described, where you're like ordering stuff and testing it, and then throwing it away, and that lasted for probably a year. Where we would get a version of it.
And this is a really key point to the listeners out there that are thinking about this kind of business. And that's why I bring it up, because anybody I've ever talked to that's been in the hardware business, it's been a total nightmare and a disaster to get the product to market. And you just highlighted the issue. It's like, we spent a year building prototypes and throwing them away. Like, people need to really understand that if they want to go down
this path. And especially for a software guy, understanding that's very different than anything you've ever done in software.
Oh, yeah. I can't just fix the bug and ship a new version.
That's right. There's a little bit you can do with existing hardware, but when there's a bug, you got to deal with it. You got to learn as much as you can with what you got, and then you got to do a turn. And it if you think about software, usually it takes 5 or 6 turns to get that done. Well, there you go. There's 6 months right there. And that's in kind of the best of times. So then that's the first phase. Then you get to something that's working, it's sellable, I can manufacture it, and I can manufacture it and guarantee the quality. And by the way, those last two things are what you spend the whole last half of that year. So the first half of the year is getting something that really worked and functioned. And the last half of the year is making sure that we built something that when we manufactured it on a manufacturing line, it would be consistent. We could test it on the manufacturing line. We'd do a good job of it. Then the second phase is when you're in production. And for the first 6 months, like we had a cable that one out of 100 of them, the cable melted under power. And then it would cause the camera to stop functioning. But it took a long time to find that because you had to use it for 6 months and you had to, it only happened very, very, very infrequently. And that second phase, you have, you know, hopefully your goal is to have like 5% returns and then move on with life. And then you do like pretty significant iterations of your hardware. And then the third phase is I'm locked in the hardware. I haven't changed it. I haven't changed our hardware for a year and a half. And I'm just updating the software. And yeah. We launch software updates all the time. And so what's neat about it is that once you get that platform, what you can do in software is typically amazing. You just got to make sure that you've thought about the right things and enabled those things in the hardware. So then your software updates can be super powerful. Kind of think about it like the Tesla. They launched self-driving capabilities after they launched the car because they knew what they wanted. But then they had to come out with a new version of the car in order to support the
Absolutely.
Next version of self-driving. And, but it's an iterative process, you know. I mean, and it's it is a lot of work. It definitely was harder. If I had to do it over again, I would say I'd absolutely do it because our brand is so incredibly strong. If you want to solve this problem, if you own a small business that has assets, you want to solve this problem, and we are the only company to go to do that, and we own that space.
So speaking of that, if you've got HR problems, managing your team can be as easy as 1, 2, 3 with Gusto. No more late nights for processing payroll or dealing with business tax filings. No more painful spreadsheets for attendance tracking. Say hello to our new smart HR platform. Check out gusto.com/startuphustle to get a free 3-month subscription now. That's gusto.com/startuphustle. And so I was looking on your website and it looks like you also have a service for businesses, right?
Yep.
And so in some way, do you guys replace like paying like a real physical, you know, security guy that would just like walk around all night and do nothing?
Yeah, I mean,
you put him out of business.
There's my sales pitch, right? Yes, that is exactly what we do. If you look at the market, you can spend $10 a month or $20 a month and get cameras, maybe $40 a month and get ADT. And then your next upgrade, if you're still having crime problems, which by the way, none of those things deal with auto burglary, none of those things deal with package theft, none of those things actually prevent most actual break-ins, none of them protect your fleet of cars, your next step up is a guard. So you're going from $50 a month, and then your next step up is $10,000 a month, maybe 20 if you want to do 24/7. And so we effectively own that entire price band for anybody that is having security issues. And you know, I mean, if you're paying attention this last 2 years, especially for businesses that have, heck, you got an electrician fleet and you got copper. I mean, that, there you go. You own an RV sales site, you own a truck fleet and that has catalytic converters. You have to be protecting these assets. And so that's what we do. And we, you know, you mentioned the guard not doing anything. One of the things we have to also learn is not only are we cheaper and we're able to like do that effectively, we're way better than a guard. Because if you have a job, let's just put you in the seat of this guard. Hey, I want you to sit at this chair for 4 hours and look at this screen where nothing's happening.
And instead, play on your phone and watch TikTok videos.
Amen, right? Like that's why TikTok is doing so well, is because of all these poor security guards out there. They suck. They're expensive and they suck. And so, the number one thing that you see all the time is you see, one of the inspirations for starting Deep Sentinel was I started researching the space and talking to like Mark Zuckerberg security staff. What do they do between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m.? Jumping jacks, man. You're paying these guys a full-time job. They're maybe former secret, special forces, not secret service. Most of them are former special forces or military, and you're paying them to do jumping jacks for 8 hours a day to do nothing. It doesn't matter if you're the best trained person in the world. you're going to start screwing up because your job sucks. And one of the neat
things it's just too boring. There's nothing to do.
It's horrible.
So then go ahead. So how does your team manage that where I have to feel like 99% of their job is watching Amazon delivery guys walk up to front doors?
Yeah, about 95% of it is. But there's two things that we do. Number one is we make sure to give them the information. Hey, this is a low priority, high priority event. Here's what I want you to look at. And then we also measure the pace at which we feed videos to our guard. So unlike, you know, you're used to kind of seeing a camera system where you go to your hotel lobby or your, you know, whatever commercial property lobby, and you see the person that just has a CCTV and there's a bunch of stuff not happening. We flip that over where instead of the guard being in control of what they look at, we actually feed videos to the guard and we require them to respond. And so we're able to do two things with that. Number one, we measure the pacing of what we send to the guard. Number two, which is actually the most important, we then measure the guard's response. So we look at, did this guard view this for 5 seconds or 25 seconds? Did they view it for 5 minutes? Did they call the police? And then three, we close the loop. We optimize those feeds based on what produces productivity from the guards. In fact, we even use that for training machine learning models. And what is actually working and what's not working? You know, you can have AI that, like you said, on your cameras, it identifies a package. What we are measuring is not just, is this a package? We're measuring, does a package plus a gun, plus a person driving by result in a guard action? What's the action? What's the outcome?
And so are you guys working
on that outcome?
I would imagine then you're working nonstop to figure out how to improve the machine learning and computer vision to identify like, that's the weekly UPS guy. Like, is that something you guys are continuing to work on? So it's like you kind of like filtering out that kind of stuff.
That's exactly right. Like, again, let me use Tesla as an example. We've been able to look at a camera and say, is that a car and is it going and is this a person? What Tesla focuses on with their autopilot is not, is this a person? They're focusing on, did my driver hit the brakes? Did they veer the car slightly to the left? Did they veer the car to the right? Did they speed up? Did they slow down? All of those things are actually what you care about. And with the most recent advances in machine learning, what we do is called self-supervised deep learning. And with those types of data inputs, you can start predicting what the actual physical outcome is instead of just what are these things and draw a bunch of boxes on a screen.
Well,
because again, boxes on a screen are getting a bunch of alerts, of package alerts. It's just as noisy and just as meaningless for the purposes of actually stopping crime.
Well, so to rephrase what you just said in a different way is, you're basically, your guards look at these videos for 5 or 10 seconds or whatever, and then they basically say it's an issue or not an issue, right? And then you basically have the history of all of that over thousands of times that then you can feed into some kind of machine learning algorithm that says, here's all the things that we've watched that we said were not a problem, and here's how we reacted to them.
Bingo.
And then try and break the signal from the noise, right?
That's exactly right. We are basically taking one of the problems in machine learning, I'll express it technically, is that if you just have a video and you didn't label it with this is a person, this is a car, it's actually not that useful for making an AI better. We have this really unique closed loop data set that includes the actions of the guards. And so we're actually training the AI based on the actions of the guards, not just based on, is this a tree or a car or a person?
Not just object recognition.
That's right. That's one of these really unique kind of breakthroughs from a technology perspective that means we took what is considered at the state of the art, a solved problem. And then we opened up an entirely new realm of problem that isn't solved. The space of analyzing the response to videos is completely open. It's bleeding edge technology. Tesla's at the forefront of that as it relates to cars, and we're at the forefront as it relates to security.
So to do what you guys are doing, did you have to raise a lot of capital and VC capital and stuff to get this off the ground?
I did. You know, I've raised about a little over $20 million to get this going. And you know, I'll be frank, at the beginning that was easier. And then once the pandemic hit, pandemic was not good to our business. So it's been tough for the last 2 years. And really just in the last 6 months, since October of last year, we broke out. And that's been awesome to see. I mean, a lot of hard work. As you can tell, we're a super mission-driven organization. Like we believe strongly that stopping crimes can change security. And, you know, it's just funny to say that because you'd be blown away how other security companies don't think that. So what we're saying really should be table stakes. But, you know, ADT doesn't actually stop that many crimes. We probably stop as many crimes as a small company as ADT does across their entire business, just because that's what we do. We actually stop crimes.
Is that something that you guys can actually measure to say, this is how many crimes that happened and this is how many stopped? Like, you actually know that?
Absolutely. Every morning I wake up to a list of, here are all the crimes that we stopped. Here's where we intervened. Here's where this trespasser stopped. The one thing that we do have that's a little bit of a bummer, which is it's ironic and funny, is we stop 99% plus of our interventions. And so a lot of our videos, if you go to our YouTube channel, we have a YouTube channel on Deep Sentinel on YouTube. We take the ones that are more dramatic. We're like, you see the person pull out the crowbar. But honestly, most of our videos are like, person is hanging out, just loitering. And we say, hey, this is Deep Sentinel security. And then they walk away instantly. And so we stop the crime so early in the cycle that most of our interactions are really not that dramatic.
You deter people that are just like hanging around being creepy.
I mean, if you look at the video, again, go on your next door and look at this. You look at the people that actually get broken into. A lot of the times the burglars are outside their house for 3, 5, 10, 15 minutes getting ready because nobody's watching the videos. In fact, let me actually even take that a step further. If you have a video doorbell and somebody's about to break into your house, you know what they do? Well, a couple of years ago, they used to avoid it or maybe put tape over it. What they do now is they ring it. They make sure they trigger it as many times as possible. Why would they do that? That doorbell is giving them information about you. It's supposed to be your way of seeing your front door. It also tells them, hey, nobody's home. Nobody's paying attention to their camera. We got the house for at least 20 minutes. We're good. And so the act of intervening at that moment, it doesn't take a lot. It just takes them knowing that there's a human being watching. It has this entire psychological shift, even when we have people that are fully prepared to break in. There's two or three of them. They've got masks. They've got hoods on. They've got crowbars. They've got bolt cutters. They've got a battering ram, some sort of like jerry-rigged battering ram. If they know someone's watching and the police are on their way, crime's done. Yeah. No damage.
They're looking for the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
So the effect of the pandemic on your business is definitely interesting to think about, because I could see home security maybe being a little less important if everybody's working from home. You're like, I'm home all day. I'm not as worried about security anymore. But I would have thought that office security would have been like through the roof. Like, there's nobody in any of these office buildings. What are we doing for security?
Does that make sense?
Is that what you saw?
Absolutely. We only launched our business line of business. I think it was in March of 2020. So it was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And so we had to launch a new product in the midst of the pandemic. And that was particularly what was hard, was changing our brand, changing our mode of operation, changing all of our operations while going to the pandemic. You are right, though. When I look at the inflection point we hit 6 months ago, it was because we launched that product. We got enough momentum behind it throughout 2020. Then we found out how to sell it, how to market it, how to price it in the early part of 2021. And then by Q3 2021, we figured all those things out, and the market, I mean, it's literally just a, you know, elbow curve in terms of every one of the metrics in the business.
I'm intrigued, you know, what is your guys' go-to-market strategy? I'd honestly never heard of your product before, right? Like, I don't see it at Best Buy or Target. You know, what is your go-to-market strategy? How do you reach your audience?
Yeah, so we have three key thrusts to our go-to-market strategy. Number one is we realize that people, like you just said, that the crime of offices went up. And what we found was that where those people go is typically to local installers. And so the number one thing that we changed was we changed from a mostly direct model to a mostly channel model. And so most of our distribution now goes through installation. The second thing we learned was, as we launched business, our business line, residents wanted installers. Maybe 20% of them wanted an installer, 30% of them. pretty much 100% of the businesses wanted an installer to do this. They didn't want to do it themselves. If they're hanging up, you know, Arlo cameras or whatever, then they'll do that themselves. But they're not really trying to solve a security problem if they're doing that. The people that want to solve a security problem want a professional, and they want a professional on site. So we had to launch an entire network. We now have almost 380 installers all around the U.S. Almost every major metro area is covered now.
I just talked to one the other day, literally yesterday.
There you go.
I had somebody at my house that provides our normal home security, and I'm actually looking for a video system like this because I have an Arlo system. The batteries are all dead, so all the thieves that want to come by, they're all dead. They've been dead for months, probably like most people who have wireless systems. It's a common problem, right? And I've actually been shopping for this, and I might be your next customer, maybe even before the podcast is over.
You can play around with Arlos all you want. Go ahead. Play with Arlos because all they are is a toy. Right? You want to watch your baby and have a baby cam? Sweet. You want to look at your kids in the driveway? Sweet. You want to post stuff on Facebook? Sweet. You want to solve a security problem? As soon as you ask yourself the question, is this actually going to make me safer? You know the answer. You know, and I was actually kind of embarrassed the way that I learned this was, again, my neighbor had this home invasion and we had this neighborhood watch meeting. And I asked the police officer, more friendly to me now that I help him with his job. But I asked him like, hey man, she has everything. How come this still happened to her? And he said to me, what did you expect the cameras to do? Jump out and stop the crime? Yeah. They did what they're supposed to do. We have a recording, but now you just have a picture of six
guys. We have a recording of the guy in the mask who smashed the window. What do we do now?
Yeah. Congratulations. Right. And you know, he and I developed a relationship as I started like really digging into this, and he started showing me like, look at this. This is my drawer of thumb drives of all these videos of people that we don't know. We don't have a facial recognition database. We can't do CSI Miami on this. Like there's nothing we can do with most of these things unless we happen to know the perp the second we see the video. And so I started to realize the only way to solve this was to go to prevention. You have to move into a prevention mode in order to solve this. But again, to complete your answer about, you know, selling into businesses, once we added the installer, we added the business and we marketed it, we got it right, we figured out how to do it incredibly well. So now we stop all these crimes every day. Then we had to start getting the word out. And that's what we've been doing with content. So we have a ton of content. If you search for preventing crimes with cameras and that kind of part of the world, which we think is the future, we're owning that world from an organic perspective. We own that narrative, and we needed to make sure that we had a good foothold on what it is we do, how we get it to you, and then let's tell the story. And that's what we're doing now.
Yeah. And I can see working with local installation partners all over the country would be an excellent go-to-market strategy for you. It's just my experience with that in the past has also been very difficult. Like, how do you get them to sell your product versus somebody else's product? And how do you train them? And just all of that has got to be a nightmare. And you must have a handful of people that all day long just have to deal with trying to train.
And that's what we had to do this last year. You asked, like, why didn't it just take off off the bat? And that's why we had to build that. And by the way, building that in 2020 was almost impossible because they weren't going on site. Like, they didn't have the demands to go on site because there was this weird kind of up and down of the pandemic.
Yeah.
2021 was where that really turned around. Businesses started to open up. People started really kind of being open to having contractors on site. And so that did take some time. We do have to get the training down. Here's the key thing, though, for them. Our close rate is wicked high. From proposal to close is like 80%. And so, again, right, like they're putting a proposal in front of someone who says, hey, I want to stop crimes. Hey, I'm Matt. I want to protect my business. I want to actually have something that stops. I got three bids. This bid for just cameras, and that's $5,000. This bid for just cameras, and that's $5,000. Or this bid from Deep Sentinel, and it's $5,000 up front and then $300 a month. But it actually stops the crime.
Are you able to
tell which one anybody who's serious about stopping crimes is going to get? Like, it's just easy peasy.
Is there any angle here where you're able, like people are able to get discounts on like home insurance or things like that because they use this type of system?
Yeah. So a lot of people both have business and home insurance depending on their policy. Do you have a monitored system? Do you have live 24/7 guards? There's industries like cannabis where they have to have a live 24/7 guard. where not only is it a discount to insurance, it's actually part of their accreditation. Like they need it in order to be certified. And so we're filling a gap where, again, like let's look at cannabis. Their alternative is $20,000 a month. And so we're able to provide that for significantly less at higher quality. So yeah, I mean, it interfaces into that industry. For the average homeowner, though, they get a discount that's pretty similar to having an alarm, but again, effective.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. It's just interesting to think about all those go-to-market strategies and partnerships, and you know, it's just for our listeners to think about, right? Like, you know, potentially you partner with an insurance company that all of a sudden is, you know, recommending your product to everybody. And those are all the weird, you know, channel partnerships you have to think about over time. And some of them work and some of them don't. And it's just,
and we've done that. We have an insurance company, one of the top three in the nation, is one of our investors. But you also have to remember, like, big companies are pretty risk averse, right? So how do you navigate that? We're a small company. If they recommend us, does that cause problems? Da 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 da. And so we've got to make sure that we manage both sides of that equation. Like, how do you find the right size partner for my business? I also know companies, right? There's a great story. I think it's a pickle company in 1990 that got the best distribution partner for a pickle company ever, Walmart. And Walmart squeezed their prices so that they were one penny unprofitable on every jar they sold. Oh, and they went out of business 3 months later.
Wow.
And so you got to pick your partners. You know, yeah. Distribution's not the only name of the game, right? And, you know, I think Walmart learned a good lesson from that. That made it onto the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And so Walmart's procurement department is now required to make sure that their vendors are at least profitable on the business, or they have a profitable business plan through partnering with them. Because it, you know, you get these big distribution deals, you got to be able to service them. You got to make sure that you do them well and it fits into your overall business.
I mean, that's the key to business, is it's got to be a win-win-win for everybody, right? Otherwise, it doesn't work. So, well, once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Gusto. If you're looking for an all-in-one HR platform, it's time to check out Gusto. You have everything you need in just a few clicks of a button. You'll even get 3 months free. I don't know why I can't say 3 months free.
It's almost like it's the first time you said
it. I know. When you go to gusto.com/startup hustle, that's gusto.com/startup hustle. Well, I really enjoyed the conversation today. And one thing I've been thinking this whole time, I'm like, man, maybe I need to buy one of these things. And honestly, the cameras are super cool looking. They almost look like they would shoot you with a laser.
That was so if I can, before we wrap up, I have to tell a little story about the design. So most design firms, you hire a design firm, and they're like, we're going to make your product look like Apple. And I was like, I don't want it to look like Apple. Apple looks, you know, comfortable. I want this product to make you feel uncomfortable. I want you to feel safe.
Like a Gatling gun.
I want it to be able to be both safe when my wife and I come home, and then intimidating if the wrong person's there. And so I went through this massive design cycle. In fact, we won a bunch of awards for the design for kind of standing out in that way. But it was hard to get people to do it. And so I literally went and I found designers who had worked on video games to design futuresque security cameras. Because in video games, you do have that. They have like video cameras that do shoot you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sweet. I hired a video game artist out of the Ukraine, actually, to design some examples. And then I brought those to a top tier mechanical design firm. I said, I want us to get somewhere between Apple and here. It can't be all aggression, I'm going to kill you, but it can't be just soft and friendly, and I'm going to, you know, put butter on it and eat it for breakfast. Like, that, it has to be somewhere in the middle. And that was a really fun experience to get to design that kind of soup to nuts.
It's always fun to build new things, man. That's the favorite, the best part. The hard part is the part you're in now, where it's the operational side of this and growing it and scaling it, and the brain damage that comes along with that, right? Like, having like, we have 50 guards that look at TVs all day, right? Like,
yep.
Just that part of it is a whole different challenge.
You've done that well enough before you get to scale.
Yeah, it's a whole different problem than the initial stages where you're trying to build the thing. Like, it's a totally different. And honestly, there are guys like me that love and enjoy like the early stage of it, but dread every second of the later stage of it. Like, I'd rather go build something new. Like, I want to build cool new things. I don't want to like manage 50 employees that are doing that. That's a whole different problem.
It is. And it requires a completely different skill set.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, you got to change some of your leadership. You got to be willing to change the way that you look at the business. I'm fortunate in that I really enjoy both phases. And with this business, you know, we didn't talk about the mission too much, but, you know, our company's mission is to make people safer. And the fact that that has just such a huge impact, you know, I get an email every week from a customer. I slept soundly for the first time last night. I cannot believe that this is a real product. I can't believe I didn't have this a year ago. I can't ever imagine my life without this. And that to me, whether I'm in the positive phases of building product and the exciting phase of that, or I'm in the doldrums of that first year of the pandemic, that's what drives me. So the one thing that I would note about this company that I think has really, really been neat for me is that I chose really carefully. I spent a year and a half choosing this business before I started it. And I wanted to make sure that when it got really demotivating, when all those external factors went away, that what we were doing was meaningful enough that it would overcome that. And that's probably the single best decision I've made when I started this company.
Well, it's very cool. And I love what you're doing and the mission of it. And I am seriously looking to buy a camera system right now. So tell me, how long do the batteries last for these things?
So again, we've got two systems. We've got our own, which is our wireless. Those batteries last about 3 months. You can also add solar to them, and then they basically last forever. And then we have our commercial offering, which is our power over Ethernet, and that integrates with a bunch of different power over Ethernet cameras out there. And those obviously last forever.
Yep. Okay. Very cool.
The price difference is significant, right? You're going kind of from a consumer product to a commercial product. So it's a pretty big jump up in terms of the upfront costs.
Well, very cool. I love what you're doing. And I'm sure you'll get a few listeners that go check out your website. And you want to tell everybody where they can find more information about you?
Yeah, sure. So thanks for asking, Matt. I would say instead of directing us to them to our website, I would say the most interesting place is that YouTube channel I mentioned a little bit ago. Go to YouTube, search for Deep Sentinel, Sentinel. And we publish a video every single week of the crimes that we stop. And that's my pride and joy is that video. We take the best crimes that we stopped every week. We put them together in a little compendium and we publish it. And it's called our Stopped line. And it's just hard hitting. It's crime after crime after crime of just stop, get off the property, stop, get off the property, stop, get off the property. That's the number one way. And then the second way, you know, if you're interested in kind of following our company and my journey, I do publish stuff on LinkedIn. And so I direct people to my LinkedIn and you can follow me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate having you on today.
Matt, it was awesome. Thanks for all the great questions.
All right. Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.